This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Are you tired of getting slammed by hidden ticket fees? On SeatGeek, the price you see is the price you pay every time. No hidden fees, no surcharges at checkout, ever. Download the SeatGeek app today to start saving. SeatGeek is your ticket to amazing sports ticket deals. What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. As always, I am your host, Shane Told. This podcast is all about me talking to other lead singers about what it's like to be the frontman or frontwoman of a band. Today we have an awesome episode. I speak to Craig Mabbitt of Escape the Fate. He also used to be in Bless the Fall. He started The Word Alive. So it's very interesting. But what's most interesting, I think, about Craig is the amount of times his name seems to get mentioned on this podcast. Like, seriously, for a while there, it seemed like every episode, Craig's name was coming up. So it's really, really great to hear it straight from the horse's mouth, hear his perspective, hear his stories about all this crazy stuff that happened with him no longer being in Bless the Fall, with him no longer being in The Word Alive, and how he got there to be the frontman of a very, very big popular band in Escape the Fate. Before we get into it, as always, I want you guys to get in touch. There's so many ways you can do it. We have a Twitter, at LeadSingerSyn, S-Y-N. We've got an Instagram account, which is at LeadSingerSyndrome. And of course, we've got old-fashioned email, LeadSingerSyndrome@gmail.com. Also, when you're done this episode, if you're interested in the perspective of some other people, listen to the episode with Bo Boken. Listen to the episode with Telly Smith. They have some very different perspectives and outlooks on kind of what happened. So it's really cool to go back, listen to the old podcasts, and be able to compare. And also, while I have you, I always want to remind you about the Amazon affiliate link we have. If you buy anything on Amazon, all you got to do is go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage. You log in as normal, and whatever you buy on there, we get 4-6%, which is, it can really add up. So please, if you like the show, please give us that support. It means the world. Anyways, let's jump in. Here it is, my conversation with Mr. Craig Mabbitt of Escape the Fate.
Hello.
Hey, Craig. How's it going, man?
It's going good. How are you?
Good, dude. Great.
What are you up to right now?
Dude, I am I'm chilling in my apartment.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Where you're in what city?
Today we're in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
I've never been to Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Yeah, I actually think I did third grade out here or fourth grade.
Really? You lived there?
Yeah.
Crazy, man.
Yeah, I was a military kid, so.
Yeah, that's nuts. No, I don't think we've ever played there, and I know you were in Erie yesterday. It's funny, we've never played Erie before, but I dated a girl that lived there once.
Yeah, I think yesterday was our first time playing Erie as well.
Yeah, it's funny, man. No, the hilarious thing I remember in Erie, when I went there a couple times, they had a sign, like a billboard, that said, "It's okay to heart Erie." Like, it's okay. You don't have to shit talk your own city if you live here or whatever.
Dude, I feel like everybody I ran into yesterday wanted to get out of Erie.
Yeah.
Like, we had we had our meet and greet, and this girl's like, I got to get out of Erie, and we were parked right next to a McDonald's, which clearly I ordered food from there. And the girl working there is like, oh, you're playing right there? Oh, it would be so cool to get out of Erie. And I'm like, oh, my God, everybody wants to leave.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man. I mean, they have, like, horrible weather, too, right? Like, right on the lake, they get, like, the lake effect snow. So it's like...
Yeah, it wasn't too bad yesterday.
No, dude, I'm in Toronto. It's beautiful today, finally. We've had, like, a brutal winter, man. But yeah, no, it's a long weekend here in Canada. They call it May 2-4 because you drink a 2-4 of beers. And yeah, and I'm going up to a cottage with my buddies, so I'm like, dude, I'm stoked.
Yeah, you're living the life right now,
living
dude.
The life, dude. And you're in Fort Wayne, which apparently is like your, you know, one of your old hometowns, which is random.
Yeah, one of them.
Hey. Cool, man. Hey, you want to jump in? Want to start talking?
Yeah, let's do it.
I guess we already are. We'll probably just put this in the show. Who cares, right?
Okay.
But I haven't talked to you in a while, man, like since Warped Tour.
Yeah, it's been a while.
How you been?
I've been good, man. Just doing the dang thing. Just got word that we're going to take the summer off. Well, we have like two festivals.
Yeah.
But, you know, one festival in 1 month and another festival the other month, that definitely is a lot of time off.
That's
compared
cool.
to what I'm used to.
Oh,
so I'm excited to finally get a summer off and work on some new music and planning on moving again back to Phoenix.
Yeah, I see this, you got a California number here. Are you out in California now?
No, I've had the California number for a couple of years, but right now I'm in Vancouver, Washington.
Oh, crazy. Crazy.
Which
that's
is like
near Portland.
10
right?
minutes. Yeah, 10 minutes away from Voodoo Donuts in Portland.
So for a McDonald's reference and a Voodoo Donuts reference, that's good stuff. No, well, that's sweet. So, I mean, obviously, you know, not being able to get Voodoo Donuts anymore is going to really suck, but maybe going back to Phoenix will be cool. Like, you got family there and stuff?
Yeah. I got family there. So my little brother's out there. My uncle's out there.
Right on. Cool.
That's where I'm from, so.
Sure.
It'll be nice.
That's good, man. No, it's funny. I'd say your name has been brought up on this podcast probably more than anyone else.
That's crazy.
It's so crazy. Like, I don't know if your ears are burning or whatever they say happens when people are talking about you, but like, yeah, I mean, I had Bo on the show. I had Telly on the show. Ash Costello on the show like a few weeks ago too. They're all like talking about you, and I'm just like, you know what, man? I think we need to talk to Craig Mabbitt on Lead Singer Syndrome. So it's really good to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Of course, man. So, first time on the show, I always like to start off kind of at the beginning, whenever kind of music, you know, took hold of your life, because there's always a point in everyone's life where it's like music takes over, you know?
There's a point where music takes over and you know you want to do it, and then, I mean, the point I reached where it really, like, hit a bad point, and then shortly after that really consumed me was you were there.
I was there. Yeah.
You were there. You know, I was with the Bless the Fall guys on our first ever overseas UK tour. And you know, at the time we were still just really super young kids and really amped for the opportunity to go over there. But we also were kids that grew up very differently in Arizona. They were from Scottsdale, which was like the more expensive side of town, and I was from the cheap side of town. So once things started happening for our band, you know, you're in close quarters with dudes, and I'm the guy that's hanging out with the fans and having a beer in the living room with the fans' parents, and they're having the argument over who gets the outlet for their laptop.
but
I didn't own one, so you know, plus personal stuff was happening in my life. My girlfriend at the time got pregnant after just being together for a year. So that was scary and confusing. And, you know, I get out to the UK, and this was back when, you know, you weren't hooking up to Wi-Fi with your cell phone. You had to get a calling card to call back home.
Yeah.
So, you know, shit just got difficult for me, and I was old enough over there to drink. And I remember just being in my bunk on that bus with everybody. And
yeah, we shared a bus, just so people know. Yeah,
we did.
Yeah,
we shared the bus. And I'd be in the bunk with just a water bottle full of whiskey. And, you know, didn't really know what to do. And I ended up ended up talking to the guys, and they were like, dude, if you need to go home and handle stuff, go home. That turned into me leaving the tour, which turned into them telling me they didn't want me to come back to the band, which, you know, was their decision, which is fine. We get along now, you know.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, I know it took a while.
It did take a while, but obviously they were left high and dry, and
yeah,
you know, we all needed to grow up. We're just young kids, and you know, within the next month, I was flying out to Vegas and joining Escape the Fate, and that's really when I had to make the decision. Like, you know what, dude, this really is something that consumes your life, and.
Yeah, and you found out firsthand.
I had so many lucky opportunities to bless the fall and gave it all up. And that didn't really change anything for me personally back at home. And I was very fortunate enough to have a second chance at it. And when I got that second chance, I was like, well, here it is.
Yeah, man. That's the thing. Like I remember, you know, we were there. We were on tour. Yeah, I was like, this is 2007. And you know what's crazy about that, man, is like, I've been asked in interviews myself if I'd ever, you know, if, you know, I've been in Silverstein now for 16 years. People always ask, oh, have you ever, like, just wanted to fucking, like, give it up, you know, like, just walk out and go home? And I would say on that tour, man, was the closest I've ever been to doing that.
And that's crazy.
So I don't know what it was, like, if there's something in, like, some kind of vibe going on. Because I look back now and I don't really know why. Like, the shows were pretty good. I got along with everybody. I got along with you. I got along with all the you know, we called you guys the kids table. Because you were That's a lot awesome. Younger than us at the time. I mean, now it's like I think you're only 5 or 6 years younger than me. But it's funny, like, when 5 or 6 years when, you know, you're like 18 and I'm 24 or whatever.
Oh, yeah, dude, that's 20, a big difference.
26, yeah, whatever, you know. Yeah, it's a big difference. But yeah, man, I was super bummed out. I remember one show specifically. I've never felt like we were somewhere in the UK. I can't remember, some shithole town. And I've never felt worse, man. And I was like as close as I've ever been to just being like, guys, I'm going home. And it really struck me, because you were still on the tour at that point, and it really struck me as interesting that you did it. And I never talked to you about that before.
Yeah,
but I don't know if there's just something going on or some kind of vibe. I remember it was like December, you know, and you know, in Europe in December,
it was
really
depressing.
It was very
gloomy. It was, I mean, I had personal stuff going on. We had just finished all of Warped Tour, which people were telling us horror stories while we were on the tour. Like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys are doing this in a van.
Yeah.
People say you break up once you do a whole Warped Tour in a van.
Yeah, you break up, or like if you're lucky to survive, literally survive and not fucking crash and die.
Like, yeah, I'm like, no, we're good to go. So doing Warped Tour in the van and then immediately going out of the country for the first time and not having a way to get a hold of anybody back at home. It just, I don't know, it just eventually took its toll, because that was, I still remember the tour pass of that tour. You guys had little flags for each country you were going to, and I honestly think within the past, I mean, if that was 2007, we're talking a decade ago.
Almost, yeah.
I don't think in the past 10 years I've done a tour over there, which clearly I've done a lot now.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've done a tour over there that was as long as the tour we did with you guys.
No, it was long. Maybe it was too long, you know, in fact.
Yeah, it was a very long one.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's crazy looking back on all that stuff, man. But, like, it really does strike me, like, you know, obviously we've had so much time. I mean, you have for sure, and all the rest of the Bless the Fall guys have, and I have even, to look back and rethink it, and, you know, and you can reflect back on your mistakes, and hindsight is 20/20, but it is really interesting that everybody that was on that bus still has a career, and is still doing it, and is still doing pretty well, and I think that's pretty cool that everyone was able to sort of land on their feet. But, I mean, you took such a big risk, I mean, doing, like, leaving that opportunity, you know, before it started.
Oh yeah,
you guys were right on the cusp of blowing up, and I don't know. Did you really understand that at that point?
I didn't. You know, at the time, I was, you know, like I said, I wasn't making any money. Our manager at the time, who was, I'm sure you remember him, Stuart Tegart.
Of course I know. Yeah.
I know they named the Warped Stage after him for a while.
Rest in peace. You know, he's sad. Yeah.
He was doing his thing, and you know what people don't realize is it is very tough on the road, especially when you're surviving off of $5 a day per diems.
Sure.
It's not like I I hated the Bless the Fall guys, but you know, when they have debit cards that their parents put money on for them to eat, and I don't have that, which is fine, you know, that they were fortunate enough to have that help, and yeah, that's good for them. But you know, I didn't. So it was like trying to survive off the $5 a day, but then trying to split $2.50 to try to put to the side to send money home because I just had a kid of my own. It was tough, dude.
Oh, it was very, very tough. I can't imagine. You know, I don't have kids, yeah, I can't even imagine being in that position.
So finishing tours and coming home with no money and you know, fighting with my ex's mom because I wasn't making anything, and
yeah,
I was gone for 8 months out of the year. It just, you know, it took its toll, man. And it just got to the point on that tour that I was like, guys, I don't know if I can do music. I don't know if I can do it. And I didn't really see, you know, it, which sucks. It was very unfortunate for me not to enjoy the
ride,
you know, the uprising, yeah, of the band and see that, you know, something real is happening here, because I was just dealing with so much stuff. And, you know, maybe things would have been different. You know, they told me they'd support me going home, and then ultimately they made the decision to move on without me, yeah, which is fine. You know, I'm still here doing my thing. They're doing their thing. I just saw them at that So What Music Fest in Texas.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were all having drinks together, which is something I never thought would happen, because they were completely against it 10 years ago.
They were. That is a really funny thing too, is how, and I had a conversation kind of like this with, I think it was Spencer from Under Oath, and he was talking about how when you're a young band, a lot of bands, they don't really have like a personal identity among their members. Like everyone's kind of the same dude.
Yeah.
And I would say that you definitely already had, maybe because of some of the hardships, you know, you say you're a military kid and the traveling you did, you'd already sort of figured it out a little bit more, like you were a little more mature than the other guys.
In some aspects, I think because I was more mature that...
You thought you knew things, yeah.
Mentally, I thought I knew different things, and I think because I was a little more mature, then that caused me to do immature things,
right,
that people don't really do until they're a little bit older. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, what the hell am I doing at 19 years old drinking Jack out of a water bottle? Like, Jesus, kid. Like, what is wrong with you?
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
But, well, so, you know, we were all sharing a drink together, and I just remember, like, taking a photo for Instagram and begging Eric, which I every time I talk to the guys now, because it's getting to that time where that his last Walk album is 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
And I know it's cliche for bands to do stuff, but I have been telling the guys every single time I talk to them, they're probably so sick of hearing it. But I'm like, guys, we got to do a tour, man. We got to do a tour, at least one hometown show. We got to do it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's where it all started for us. We all started it together in the garage, and that led us to all still have careers to this day. And I think it would be very fun to celebrate that, you know.
I do too when I see
bands do it. You know, I saw Under Oath play in Portland and for the Rebirth tour, and it, yeah, was just amazing to see them all up there together, you know, because you have Aaron, who had success with the Almost, and you know, I became close to Spencer when we toured Australia together,
yeah,
and it was cool to see him do his thing with Sleepwave and now back with Under Oath. And you know, there's just, it's just great. It reminds you of what the music's all about. It's like, at the end of the day, even though there's all these horrible things that can happen, you know, the music is still there. The music still exists. And obviously we all have fans that, you know, they say, oh, your music changed my life, or they have all these memories listening to our albums. And at the end of the day, it's like you yourself as the musician have these memories because of that music. And it's cool to look back and reflect on that and remember the good times, you know.
Absolutely. No, it is cool. I would love to see that, especially being there, you know, with you guys and seeing, you know, I mean, you know, the original Bless the Fall lineup, when you were singing, there was some magic there. Like, I'm not going to lie, there was something magical about the way you were able to command the stage, and there was a certain, like, youth energy, you know, that existed, that I think is, it's not something you can, like, scientifically quantify. It just was there, you know.
Yeah.
And that would be really rad. And I mean, you guys could do it. Do like a, you play the album with them, and then, you know, Bo comes out and they do some of their greatest hits. Why not?
Oh, I would love to, I would love to do that. Man.
It would be super cool. I think people would really enjoy it. And you do it once and that's it. You know, you don't have to ever do it again. And, you know, everyone moves on and it feels good about it. So that would be very, very cool if it's in the cards.
Yeah, I mean, you've definitely went through it. And it's just weird to have a conversation and consider myself, because I talk to a lot of bands now that they remind me that I'm now a grandpa band almost, you know, like,
oh, man, it's so weird to think about, man.
You guys have been around for 10 years. I'm like, what? I still feel like I'm a kid. Like I'm going to be 30 soon, which yeah, like I'm a full, full ass grown adult now, you know, but I definitely didn't think that I would be having a, like, for instance, our headline tour at the beginning of the year for the newest album. I didn't think I would have a TM and a merch guy coming onto my crew that were going to tell me what got them into music in the first place was Bless the Falls, His Last Walk, and or Escape the Fates, This War Is Ours, which is even crazier that that's that old, because that's my second band.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I know.
And I'm like, oh my God, stop. Like, this is awesome. This is humbling. This is really, really cool. But damn, you're making me feel old. You know, what I mean?
I know, it's wild, man. It's wild like that stuff happens, you know. The first podcast I did was with Caleb from Beartooth, and, you know, the guy's 22. He might be 23 now. You know, he's on his second full career, and he's 22. You know what I mean?
Like, dude, I've seen that
guy. It's insane, you know? Like,
we took out Attack on Escape the Fates' first headliner, and I've loved that dude ever since. But he was only 15 at the time playing keyboards for
insane.
That band.
It's just so insane.
And it's like,
you know?
To see him grow from just being the keyboard player to singing and producing very successful records for his second full-time band, and he's still only that young, it's like, damn, dude. That's crazy.
It's crazy. It's completely crazy. But yeah, man. No, it's good things are happening, man. But one thing I got to ask you too, and I find this really, like, I don't want to say funny, but it's just definitely like a one of those things where, you know, you leave Bless the Fall or whatever happens, you join Escape the Fate. Bo comes in and replaces you. You're replacing Ronnie Radke. And it's almost like you and Bo are going through exactly the same thing at exactly the same time.
Yeah.
Did you feel, like, how did you feel about that? You must have felt weird about a guy coming in and replacing you in, you know, your band. But at the same time, you were doing the same thing to another guy.
Yeah.
So how was that in your, like, going on in your head at the time?
Well, in my head at the time, I was currently a little more upset. Because it took a while for obviously Ronnie to serve his time in prison and really come out and start saying stuff. You know, there was a whole This War Is Ours record that went down. And yeah, he did a couple interviews from jail. But in the meantime, I was a little more bothered and upset by the Telly thing, which it gets even more interesting how all of these people are connected. Because I started... You know, I joined Escape the Fate. I did the This War Is Ours album. I was like, man, you know, releasing songs like Ashley and Something and coming from a band that was, you know, definitely more screamo-esque, I still wanted to do music like that. So I talked to a couple of local guys and put together a group called The Word Alive. And, you know, they were getting offers from record labels and they got an offer from Fearless. And I told them, look, Epitaph is interested in us. But Epitaph is busy promoting this Escape the Fate, This War Is Ours album. You guys got to wait, you know, a while. It's going to take some time because they don't want to promote two records at the same time. So, you know, they're going to do The Flood, which was the single we had out. And then they were interested in sending a contract for my other band, The Word Alive. And at that point, the guys were not comfortable with being considered a side project or having to wait for me to do my Escape the Fate stuff. So I remember being in the middle of a tour and having a friend call me and they're like, go check out your band's MySpace. And I couldn't log into it. So I logged into my personal one and checked it out. And it was like, Word Alive signs to Fearless Records, new singer, Telly. And I was like,
wow. So you got completely blindsided.
Completely blindsided by this band that I put together. So at the time I was upset about that. And that really taught me a lot because obviously, I replaced a guy that was very passionate about me replacing him. Everybody knows how much that went. So, you know, I was trying to be humble, trying to do what was best for the band that I joined, trying to please their fans, dealing with this guy being completely nasty with me, dealing with completely being blindsided by Telly. So when it came to Bo, for instance, being a Bless the Fall and me still absolutely loving those guys and being a fan of what they write, I remember going on to like MySpace pages and stuff like that and people arguing and just sticking up for Bo and being like, dude, leave the guy alone. You know, you need to support him. I tried doing the complete opposite of what was being done to me.
Well, that's good. Because a lot of people wouldn't have that sort of foresight, especially how young you were and how, you know, that's pretty noble of you. I'm sure you don't have some fond thoughts of that.
Yeah, I tried doing my best to make sure they supported him. And I think that in turn made it so that we could all still have a relationship with each other. I remember being on the This War Is Ours headliner, the first U.S. headliner with Escape, which Attack was on. And I remember getting a phone call from Jared, and he's like, hey, me and the guys want to come see you. And they walk into the green room, and they're like, where's the drinks? So I was like, what? This is crazy. I remember at that moment, I was like, well, why can't I just, can we still be in a band or what? They're like, no. Because it did take them a while to... There was a conversation that me, Mike Frisbee, who's not with them anymore, they got Elliot now, who's a great guy, and if it wasn't Eric, it was Matt, but they showed up to a Word Alive show that I was performing locally in Phoenix, and I had just finished recording This War Is Ours, and they sat me in the car, and they showed me some new Bless the Fall stuff, and they're like, if you want back in, I remember Stuart called me too, he's like, congrats, the boys want you back, and I'm like, dude, I just signed the Epitaph. I just did a record with John Feldman. Like, it's too late. I can't do that to this new group of guys.
Right.
Like, that's going to give me a horrible name in the industry. Like, this label just spent money on this record. And I remember that's the moment where I was like, I'm sorry, dudes. And then thank God Bo lived. He was with a band called Take the Crown, and he lived with a girl that worked at the label Bless the Fall was on at the time. They're like, give this guy a go. And they went for it. And I loved that first album with Bo. I still jam that shit.
Crazy, man. It's so crazy that, you know. And I remember talking to Telly too. You know, him saying that I think there was a point when he was almost in Bless the Fall too. He told me that he basically was like, they kind of said to him, "Hey, if you want the gig, fly to wherever they were." I guess Phoenix. I guess he was not in Phoenix. He's in San Diego or something. Fly to Phoenix right now, and you know, and you're in the band. And it was the same thing with him. Like, you know, it's too late because I guess they had a lot of trouble finding somebody. You know.
Yeah, there was a point in time I remember Eric telling me, he's like, I think I'm just going to go back to school because Eric was the youngest member, and I was like, damn, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want you guys to do this. Like, you deserve it. You guys are great. A great band. And I remember hearing a demo of Telly singing a Bless the Fall song, and then Telly was playing bass for Greeley Estate.
I know, yeah, that's that whole thing too. So wild, man. That Phoenix scene though, it's insane, you know?
Yeah, that Phoenix scene at that time was a lot of inner workings, a lot of people, a lot of bands that are still, you know, still out there, which
very
is very, very
incestuous,
fortunate.
Yes.
Yeah, I Said to Kill still out there. They were around. They were a little local band at the time that we were trying to do it. There's a lot of good bands that were coming out of Phoenix.
There was. I was talking to Brian Dales from Somerset too, and we came to the conclusion that the reason there's so many good bands from Arizona is because it's too fucking hot outside. No one goes outside. Yeah. Everyone just stays in their house and practices guitar or drums or whatever.
And it was a very tight-knit community, and I owe it to at the time it was Tim Harmon who did Hour Zero Records, and I think maybe he shot you guys a couple times. Maybe.
What does he do?
Tim Harmon?
I don't know that. I don't think I know Tim Harmon. No.
No? Huh, I could have sworn that he did some photos for you guys.
Oh photos. Oh shit.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Harmon photography.
You know, maybe. I'm kind of the worst, to be honest.
Let me think of
sorry,
think
Tim,
of a good photo
if I know you. If I know you really
no,
well,
fine.
I'm sorry.
He did like the Chiodos AP cover where they were all in the American Apparel boxer boots.
Yeah, I remember that. Yep.
Do you remember that one?
I do, absolutely.
So I owe it a lot to him. He promoted a lot of shows and did a lot of photos, and it became a tight-knit family. It was like the Main, Scary Kids, Greeley Estates, Bless the Fall, We're Live, I Said to Kill,
The Bled.
Lydia, The Bled. I know there's a lot more. Stiletto Formal, Goodbye Tomorrow.
So many bands.
There's a lot back then. Yeah.
Yeah. For the size of the city, it's really only one city. I mean, I guess Tucson too, like the Bloods from Tucson, but you know, it's not like that huge an area. So yeah, man, it's cool when that stuff happens in a scene like that, and you know, you guys had a good local scene too, which you know, doesn't happen everywhere. You know, and we had one in Toronto
too. It definitely
doesn't. But
I remember back then the local bands still being local and playing shows with just other local bands, not even national bands. And there was a show every year called Show of the Year, which would just be a bunch of local bands together, and it would sell out the Marquee Theater, which is one of the only venues left from back then, still in Arizona.
Yeah, and that's a big venue. That's like a 1,400 cap venue or something, isn't it?
So to have local bands be able to do it was like insane. Damn, you know,
totally insane and totally awesome. That's great, man. Now, what a wild ride to where you are. But hey, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Craig Mabbitt. Have you ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online? Most sites make it complicated and then try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to check out SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. And as all the listeners of this show know, I'm a huge sports fan, especially this time of year with the Blue Jays. You know, the Blue Jays had such a great run last year. And SeatGeek is always the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or a concert. I have the SeatGeek app right on my phone, and just the other day I needed to get some last-minute Blue Jays tickets. And what makes SeatGeek better than all the other websites is it takes all the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets. What it does is it pulls all the tickets available on every other site into one place, so you never miss a deal. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value, so you can immediately find the best deals, the best underpriced seats. And what else I like about it is they have super detailed maps of all the venues, so you can really see the view from your seat, exactly what you're going to see when you get to the concert or you get to the game. But my favorite part is that SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Like StubHub, you never really know at the end what the full ticket price is going to be. But SeatGeek, they show you the full ticket price right from start to finish, and there's never any surprises or huge fees at checkout. Now, the listeners of my show get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, and enter the promo code Shane. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made the first ticket purchase. Once again, I know you guys are going to concerts. I know you guys are going to games. So please check it out. It's a free $20. Download the free SeatGeek app, settings tab, promo code Shane. Boom, right there. SeatGeek will send you $20 right after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code Shane today. You know, now you've been with Escape the Fate as your main gig for how long has it been now? I mean, we're talking about a better part of a decade. You know, you're talking about how you're
the end of 2007 is when I officially joined. Yep. So, almost 10 years now.
So, what's going on next with you guys? I know you guys have a record. You're taking some time off. So what is coming up?
Yeah, we have the owner of our label that runs 11-7. We're getting a lot of ads on our next single, which is called Remember Every Scar.
Like radio ads?
Radio ads. Cool. So he really wants to work that over the summer. And we're looking to do a big support tour in the fall. Just because our only option this summer was to headline.
Yeah.
And we just feel like we've been headlining way too much. So take some time off, work the single, work on some new music. Just so we have some stuff ready. Cool. going into next year.
That's great.
And then, you know, I was just talking to you earlier about wanting to do a His Last Walk tour for that album. But the following year, it's a 10-year anniversary for This War Is Ours. So me and the guys are talking about putting that tour together.
Absolutely.
And doing that album front to back. So.
Yeah, man. Well, the 10-year thing.
Very interesting, crazy time.
The 10-year thing is interesting, you know. And we touched on it a little bit earlier, but like, you know, Silverstein, we did it for Discovering the Waterfront. And at the time we planned it, it hadn't really quite been a thing that everybody was doing. Like, I think we modeled ours kind of most after like the Taking Back Sunday, Tell All Your Friends 10-year tour. That was kind of where we sort of if we stole the idea, that's where we're, that's kind of where we stole it from. And I think Jimmy Eat World had done one for like Clarity or something. There's a Phoenix band.
Yeah,
probably the best Phoenix band ever. But in my opinion,
yep, I agree.
So you know, there'd been those tours, but we did it, and now you're right. It's like almost become. It's almost went from cool to cliche to like cool again.
Yeah,
and you know now like it's almost like if you don't do it, people are like, well, why wouldn't you do it? Because
yeah, like hey, dude, it's 10 years this year. Where's the tour?
Yeah.
It's like starting to be expected.
It is. And it's in a way, though, it's like kind of cool. And I mean, I'll tell you, man, like I didn't know at first like what it was going to be like. But, you know, from personal experience, I can tell you, man, like when everyone in the room knows what the next song is going to be, instead of that being predictable and boring, it's actually really exciting. Because everyone is so hyped, is so amped and excited about that next track. You know, like this track finishes like, oh shit, you know what's next? Like to their buddies, the energy in the room is like unbelievable. So I totally recommend the 10-year thing. I think you should.
Yeah.
Do
I mean, that Under Oath show I went to, they did.
Right. Yeah.
They're only chasing safety and Defying the Great Line back to back. And it was the greatest show I've ever seen.
Yeah, I know. I saw it in Toronto too. It was amazing.
And there's just, I mean, it seems like everybody and their mother has a band that plays shows. And you know, it does get difficult from a fan's side of things to choose what show you want to go to.
Right.
So I feel like something that's special like that, that isn't just, you know, another run of the mill, hey, here's the tour with these bands.
Yep.
Something that has something special behind it, like a 10-year anniversary tour, that brings more people out.
That's right, man.
It becomes
an event rather than just another show. And you're absolutely right. You guys are out with Hell Yeah right now. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
How is that?
It is cool. I have to stop myself every day from asking any questions
nerding
pertaining to Mudvayne or Pantera.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah, Vinnie Paul, Pantera for sure is one of the greatest drummers of all time, metal drummers of all time, I would say. It's actually funny, I was in Dallas last week for a couple days hanging out, and I went to Dimebag Darrell's grave. I'd never been before. It's kind of off the beaten path. It's in Arlington, but I was out there. I was out there and saw a ball game. So I was able to go. And I actually have a kind of a crazy story about when Dimebag died. It was kind of around Christmas time, and I went down to Buffalo, and I was like shopping at a mall. Uh-huh. And I went to. Have you ever been to Mighty Taco in Buffalo?
I have.
It's kind of like the worst food. It's like so bad it's good.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I'm at a Mighty Taco in Buffalo. I'm going there for lunch. I walk in and like there's a window when I walk in the place, like, and there's a garbage can like where you throw out your tray. So I look in the window and I'm like, is that fucking Dimebag? And I'm just like,
what?
I looked at my girlfriend. I was like, I think that's not it. She's like, what? So who's Dimebag? I'm like, you don't know who Dimebag? What Dimebag? And I walk in, and then Vinnie Paul comes right out. I'm just like, I can't breathe. I'm like, and they all come by, and I like hold the door for Dimebag Darrell, and he walks through, and I'm just like, holy shit! I just saw Dimebag Darrell at a Mighty Taco, and I didn't stop talking about it for like 2 hours. You know, my
That's
girlfriend
awesome.
At the time is like, shut the fuck up. Anyways, well, it's not awesome because 2 days later I was driving to band practice and I heard Cemetery Gates on the radio and was surprised they were playing that song on the radio because it's not like a radio song that you ever hear. You know, sometimes you hear like Walk on the radio, but never Cemetery Gates. And I get to band practice and I'm like, it reminded me of seeing him. So I walk in band practice. I say to Neil, I say, hey man, you'll never guess who I saw like at Mighty Taco in Buffalo. I saw Dimebag Darrell. And he's like, what? Dude, didn't you hear the news? I was like, what? He's like, yeah.
Oh,
He was shot last night in Columbus on stage.
Ugh.
I thought they were fucking with me.
Yeah.
So that was like pretty crazy that I saw him literally I don't know if it was two
Dude,
or three
that's,
days
that's
before.
One of the, that's one of the craziest stories in our industry. And despite all that, and despite how long they've been a band and how long they've been touring and how, you know, legendary some of the members' stories are, you know, like Vinnie Paul, for instance.
Yeah.
Nicest, band, like nicest headlining band, especially from like the radio realm, which is kind of a different realm than like the Warped Tour scene.
Oh yeah, I know.
Definitely did not expect them to be so down to earth and so humble from the members of the band down to the crew.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, you guys need anything? You want something? Hey, come on. We played a festival together like about 2 weeks ago. And it's like, come on over. You guys are on tour with us. Vinny's going to be barbecuing. We go over there. Vinny's barbecuing. He bought all the barbecue and stuff just out of pocket, just sharing drinks, sharing food. And, you know, every day it's just they make you feel super, super welcome. And then the fact that they're just super talented at the same time. I mean, I've never actually seen them live before this tour, and they are super tight.
Yeah, no, it is a beautiful thing, you know, because especially when there's that generation gap, you know, like, I mean, I'm not saying that you guys are, I mean, you guys are obviously like, you know, now people are calling you veterans, which is always funny because it's like all of us, you're the young band and then all of a sudden you're the old band. It's like, when the fuck were we just the average age band?
Yeah, you
know,
exactly.
Like that just slips away somehow. But you know, you guys being, you know, in your late 20s, 30s, those guys are in like probably their 50s, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So for them to still have passion for music and just passion of, you know, of being on tour, you know, enjoying it, is a special thing, and you never know what you're going to get. Like, I won't name names, but I've had older bands just be fucking total dicks.
Oh yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and it's really, really.
I've had older
thing.
Bands. I've had younger bands. I've played with local bands, and I'm like, are you serious?
Oh, I get it when the local bands are dicks because they don't get it. You know, they just don't get it, and they think they're entitled. So I laugh. I just laugh my ass off at those.
It's crazy
bands.
That they think they're entitled because I'm sure you came from the same, you know, period of time that I came from. When I started, obviously MySpace was a big thing that helped out bands a lot.
Yeah.
But I mean, you've been doing it so long. I remember seeing videos on TRL, I believe.
Yeah, sure. I think so.
On MTV, you know?
Absolutely.
And so it's like, you definitely did the struggle of needing to go sell tickets. And I remember going to the mall and just trying to hustle and sell enough tickets at the show. And back then the promoters wouldn't even let you play the show unless you sold it. X amount of tickets.
Oh, that's
and
dirty.
Then,
I hate that stuff.
Yeah, you know, once you worked your ass off and sold those tickets, you definitely didn't show up to that national touring band show and acted like a dick. So it's like, I can't believe how entitled some of these, you know, younger bands are with everything they have to promote themselves without having to do as much grunt work.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It is easier. I think it's harder too because there's just so much out there you have to cut through.
Exactly.
But it's
easier in the way that to try to get your name out there, but it's harder to break through just the all of it.
Absolutely.
There's just so much of it now, you know.
I know, man. Absolutely. So this is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast. And some of our listeners are very into the technical stuff. They like to know about what you do for warming up, what you do for if you have any specific techniques or whatever, or what you do when you're not feeling so well. I remember Ashley told me that you gave her was it you that gave her the gummy bear trick? Is that your thing?
I did tell her about the gummy bear trick.
Yeah, what? which oh, now yeah. I'm hearing.
Bye.
Oh, she there?
Says hi.
Oh, hey, yeah. Ashley, how are you?
Says, how are you?
I'm doing very well, and I really liked our podcast.
I know. Wasn't it fun? I loved listening back to it. It was awesome. We'll do it again.
Yeah. But yeah, I did the gummy bear trick. It's just when you're feeling kind of sore, the glycerin from the gummy bears can sort of coat your throat and help you get through it. So I melt the gummy bears in hot water.
Yeah.
I put a throat coat in there, some honey, some lemon. If there's ginger around, that helps out a lot.
Yeah.
And then I usually top it off with a little bit of whiskey. But now that I'm getting older, it's like this tour, for instance, I have been drinking O'Doul's.
Oh, good for you, man.
So, you know, taking a step back from it, because as you get older, you definitely feel the good times a lot more. And when you're feeling the good times the next day, it's not a good time.
No. I started getting this thing in my 30s, and maybe it's going to start happening to you. It's basically just a straight-up two-day hangover where, like, you're hungover, you have kind of a rough day, you'll start feeling a little bit better at the end of the day. But then the next day when you don't drink the whole day, the next day when you wake up, you feel like hungover still.
Yep.
That's the worst, dude. That's like,
so that's not, it's not fun. And then it's not fun on stage trying to get through the show. And
absolutely
it's like,
not.
Dude, I can't even function now. It's like, it's time to grow up a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know you had a bit of a time on Warped Tour too. Maybe we'll.
Yeah.
I think you missed a show. I think I remember that happening.
I did. I missed one show on Warped Tour, which that was so dumb of me to do. There was this dude that had, he was going around and had, what did he call it? I don't know. It's the marijuana stuff that's like oil or wax or something like that.
Like hash oil kind of stuff or like?
Yeah.
Or is it edible?
It wasn't an edible. It was like a jar of jelly almost that was just straight up weed. And he's like, yeah, this is really, really strong stuff. You want to try it? And I'm not much of a smoker. I don't smoke cigarettes. I very rarely like smoke weed. But with it becoming more and more popular and more legalized, I guess is a good word to use.
Yeah, it is.
I'm like, sure, cool. You know, some of my other guys were there. They're like, yeah, let's eat a little bit of it and have a movie night on the bus. I'm like, you know what? That sounds great. And the guy's like, yeah, just stick your finger in and take some. Apparently, you're only supposed to do like a dab on your finger. I stuck my finger in that jar and just scooped it out.
Yeah.
Just scooped it out. I'm like, all right, cool. I remember watching the movie and reaching a point at night where I was like, you know what? I'm actually kind of tired, so I'm going to go to bed. And it didn't hit me until I was being shaken awake by my tour manager. And he's like, you guys are on first today. And I couldn't even talk. I was like, like my eyes were, I never want to feel that way ever again in my whole entire life.
This is the next day still?
This is the next day. I woke up and it was like,
oh my God, that's awful.
I couldn't walk. It took at least an hour for my eyes to even open and adjust to seeing things properly. It was the worst. It was the freaking worst.
Dude,
so our TM runs up to the office and he's like, hey, they can't go on first today. Craig's really sick. I was like, dude, just give me some water. I'm going to be able to perform. I can do this. I couldn't even talk. He's like, you can't go on stage right now. And they did that and we got in big trouble and didn't end up playing that day. And I felt like a huge idiot. But
well, hey, thanks for the story. Yeah. It's a great story. And I think at the time, maybe you weren't so forthright with that information, but
yeah, you know, especially when people are telling you, oh yeah, you guys are like the old band now. You're like, no, we're still young and cool. And you make dumb decisions like that. You're like, oh, I can't do that anymore.
Yeah,
I'm
no,
not a kid.
I took a month off drinking earlier this year. I didn't drink for the whole month of January. I did the whole 31 days and it was good for me, I think. You know, it's good.
It
for
is
me.
Really good. I only do it when I'm on the road. It's very rare that I am going out and drinking or hanging out with anybody when I'm home.
Yeah.
So when I'm home, I just spend most of the time with my kids or playing some video games, and there's really no desire there. I think it's very difficult when you're a traveling band to really find something that can keep you occupied while you're waiting for that 30 minutes to an hour that you actually are playing on stage. You know what I mean? It's like, what are you doing with the rest of your day?
I know. Well, hey, man, that's the thing. Like, you know, there's the cliche rock star drug addict, you know, thing, which, you know, when you do it, as long as you've done it and I've done it, you start to understand how that can happen, you know?
Well, of course. And you have to teach yourself moderation.
Yeah.
And something I've been learning, especially just recently in the past 2-3 years, is, you know, and hopefully people listening to this can really take this advice. It's okay to say no.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because that's my other problem is I love going out there and meeting fans, and I love going out there and hanging out. And, you know, you reach that age, especially this tour with Hell Yeah. It's like, hey, can I get you a drink? Can I get you a shot? Within 10 minutes, you're 5 shots deep and you're getting carried out of the venue. And it's not a fun thing.
No.
It doesn't feel good. You don't feel good the next day. But it's like, it's to tell somebody, hey, you know, thank you so much for the offer, but no, I'm good.
And you got to find
you
got to find your boundaries, you know, what you're okay with. And yeah, you have to kind of stick up for yourself when, you know, with what's right for you. And I think that is something people struggle with. Like the idea of peer pressure when you're in your, like, you know, when you're 29 or whether you're 35 like me, is, it seems ridiculous. I'm sure it'll seem ridiculous to younger people listening, but that doesn't go away, man. Like that peer pressure is a real thing your whole life, you know?
No, it doesn't go away.
Social, you know, pressure of things, and you have to learn you know, your boundaries and when to say no. And I totally agree with you on that.
Yep. It took me a long time to figure that out, especially with the whole Las Vegas bad boy persona that band I joined had. You know, and obviously you were there when I was with my old band. I was already having those problems, struggling with those problems. And then I joined this band that's looked at as hard partiers. It was like, all right, I need to live up to this. And it did. It took me on a dark path for a long time, and I'm lucky to have had the success and still have the career that I have today.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's like, you know, some of those ex members
of your band are lucky to be alive, to be honest with you. You know,
oh yeah.
I mean, I know I'm not gonna fucking air anyone's stories or anything, but I know I've heard, you know, I'm on the inside, I hear things, and I know some fucking crazy
shit. I've been there and that drove me personally to end up being the same guy that I was when I was in the UK, disappearing by myself and going to the bar because I didn't want to be around that shit. But it's like, at the time, I had just joined this band, so who am I to tell these people how to live their life? And
of course,
you know, who am I to say you shouldn't be doing that? And eventually, now we've weeded out the badness and the camaraderie, and just the band as a whole, as a group. It's like I look forward to leaving on tour now. You know, it's like an exciting, fun thing. We can all go out and grab food together. We can all, hey man, let's go see a movie. It's not like just these super strong. I mean, every ex member of this band has gone on to want to be a lead singer, so that should tell you something. It's just like,
so even the non lead singers in the band had lead singer syndrome.
Yeah, you know, definitely. I've heard this from people that have worked for the band crew wise. I've heard this from the other members. I've heard this from other bands. You know, we call New Year's Day right now our best friend band because we've just been touring with them for so long.
Yeah,
I've heard it from a bunch of them. They're like, "You're the most non-lead singer lead singer we've ever met." I was like, "Oh, that's I guess that's cool. I think that's cool. I'm not sure."
Yeah, I don't know. You have. I want to talk about you kind of like as an onstage persona, because I've been talking a lot about this to lead singers and stuff, and I want to get your take. Like, you know, you seem like a generally pretty social dude. You know, would you say that your personality, like when you talk to me or when you talk to your family or when you talk to, you know, your girlfriend or when you talk to, you know, fans, is the same as kind of all the time? Or do you think that you have to kind of turn it on or turn it off, like when you're in the singer, you know, role?
No, I think I'm pretty much the same.
Yeah.
When I'm talking to anybody about anything, I think, I don't know. I'd say the only times that it feels like I'm being dishonest or like trying to talk about something over the course of my career is when I'm talking about a song I don't necessarily like, but it's like a single for the band. I'm like, it's really stoked on it, and it's gonna be great. You know, that's probably the only time I've had to fake it. I guess.
I don't think I quite mean fake it. I just mean, like, I'll talk to a lot of lead singers that are, you know, they'll call themselves like introverts, you know? They'll say, you know, I'm a quiet guy.
A bunch of people like that.
And then they get on stage and they're just like breathing fire, you know? And it would be hard to say that that's being dishonest, you know, but you're a lot like me in that way that I'm just the same guy all the time. And I just like to ask people that because I get that all the time where people are like, yeah, no, I'm kind of like quiet and introverted. And then I don't know, when I get on stage, just like something comes over me, you know?
I think that's a great thing too. I know a lot of singers that are very introverted like that. And it's crazy to see them do that. And that really shows you how much of an outlet music can be for people, you know?
For sure.
You have these front men out there that, in their personal lives or how they are as a human being, they're very just quiet to themselves, and they have this outlet where they seem larger than life once they get on stage. And I'm obviously the fans enjoy it, and I'm sure for those singers that are like that as people, it's great for them to be able to get that out on stage.
Exactly, that's awesome, man. I don't know, I don't have too much else. Thanks so much for doing this, man. Anything else you want to add or talk about?
Well, I mean, thanks for having me on. I'm more than willing to hop on whenever you want to have me. Thanks to whoever's listening.
Would love to have you. Thanks so much for the stories about the old days and clarifying stuff. That's super, super interesting for all the listeners, too, that have heard. You know, they've heard Telly, they've heard Bo. You know, for anyone listening, go back and check out those episodes. It's very, very, very interesting to hear it, you know, from the horse's mouth, and that's you, Craig. You're the horse. So
yeah. Well, thanks, dude. You got my number, so keep in touch.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Have a great tour. Enjoy Fort Wayne, Indiana, as much as you possibly ever could.
Yes, and, I'll try my hardest. Enjoy your cabin trip.
Oh, I will. Yeah, yeah. Say hi to Ashley for me again, too. Have a great, great day, man.
All right. Thank you, brother.
All right. Take care, Craig.
You too. Bye.
So there it is, my conversation with Craig Mabbitt. Always great catching up. I got to be honest, though. Back in 2007, when he left that tour, I was pretty pissed. I was really pissed. But it's fine. You know, I understand now he was going through a very hard time, and it is great to see him still doing so well with Escape the Fate. I'm actually going to leave you with a Bless the Fall song from their first album with Craig singing on it. Just so if you guys haven't checked it out, you can kind of hear what Craig was like with Bless the Fall. So here it is. Guys Like You Make Us Look Bad by Bless the Fall, featuring Craig Mabbitt on the vocals on Lead Singer Syndrome. Thanks a lot. Don't forget to check out SeatGeek. Get that free $20. We'll see you next Monday. Peace and love.